guys, and welcome to episode 181 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, first of all, I just want to thank you for listening to the podcast, whether you've listened since day one or whether you've just found it. I appreciate your time, so thank you very much, and I hope it's helping you. Now, in this episode, I got Kimberly Quinlan on. She's been on the show several times, and if you haven't checked her out, I encourage you to do so. She's a therapist based in the States, and I wanted to get her on to talk about self-love and also self-acceptance. For me, it's an important one that I notice in a lot of people who struggle, not just with OCD, but generally, or who are suffering. And I just wanted to go into this topic more because I feel it's important. You know, in my own journey, I've seen it help me kind of learn that loving relationship with myself, develop it over the years. It's taken a while, but I think it's been fruitful for me. And I want to discuss it further on this episode in case it helps you guys. So first of all, we get an update on her, you know, what she's been up to, what she's learned. We didn't talk about kind of what is self-love or self-acceptance. Why is it important in recovery? What comes before self-love? Maybe self-love is not right at this time for you. So what comes before that? Kimberly shares some steps or stages before self-love. You know, having self-love, loving yourself when you have these taboo or shameful thoughts, learning to receive, she talks about, which I found fascinating, self-compassion, practicing self-love when you feel like a bad person, and reducing stigma around self-love. So yeah, I really hope this topic of self-love inspires you in some way, offers you some sort of hope or wisdom or advice or points in the right direction. So without further ado, here is Kimberly Quinlan. On today's show, I have Kimberly Quinlan. Kimberly is a licensed marriage and family therapist who treats people with OCD and related disorders, eating disorders, and body-focused repetitive disorders. She also runs her own podcast called Your Anxiety Toolkit, and she also runs cbtschool.com. Welcome back to the show, Kim.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's good to have you back on. I think this is like the fifth time, maybe sixth, who knows. But it's a pleasure to get you on each time. So before we get into the topic of today's episode, it'd be good just to get an update on you, whatever you want to share since we last kind of spoke, which I can't even remember when was on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, everything is just going great in terms of, you know, I have... The thing that for me is I feel like in the last year, I've really figured the specific area that I am most passionate about talking about, which is helping people learn to have a better relationship with their emotions. So I feel like it's the same message, but I just feel much more like this is exactly what I'm here on this earth to do.
Yeah. That's brilliant. And what would you say you were kind of focused on before, or you weren't as clear maybe before?
I think I was focused on the same thing, but I didn't. I think the big thing was I had taken this like online course, and they basically said if you had to get in, I think it's sort of similar to what you've done in the past. Like if you had to get into an elevator, what do you do? If you needed an elevator pitch. And I would always be like, well, I do this and I love to do this and I love what I do and I'm so lucky and all these things. But now I'm like, oh, no, this is exactly what I do. If I have one mission, it will be to teach people, including myself, how to have a better relationship with fear and all of the other emotions.
Yeah. No, that's great. I'm glad you got that clarity. And it kind of aligns how I would perceive you. So that's awesome. Okay, so I wanted to get you on because I wanted to talk about the topic of self-love. And instantly saying that, kind of I feel some, I don't know, I'm not going to say shame, but there's some uncomfortable emotions there for me. And one of the listener questions later kind of actually addresses that. So I won't talk more on that. But the reason I wanted to talk about self-love is because for me, I notice it in a lot of people, not just people with OCD, but anyone who often struggles mentally, at least, that there's this, I don't want to say lack of self-love or like deficit, or there's some self-hatred. And for me, it seems that when we can nurture that self-love, a lot of the other things can kind of fall into place a bit easier. It's kind of the grease to the wheels, or the bearings, so to speak. So with that in mind, I wanted to kind of address this topic. So let's start by saying, what does self-love mean to you, one, as an individual, and B, as a therapist? Or I should say two, as a therapist.
Right. Well, at risk of not answering your question, but yeah, I will come back to them, is I think it's important for us to understand the psychology of our brain, in that often the way we understand it from a philosophical perspective is that when things, you know, life is hard, and when life gets hard, which it always does, and for some of us it gets hard early in our childhood, some people it's later on in their life, when things get difficult, how we perceive that difficulty can determine how we relate to it and how we heal from it. This is very true for trauma, it's very true for childhood stuff, it's very true for any disorder or any just life thing, like death, any, you know, any life experience. When things are hard, we have a couple of choices. We can accept that things are hard because that's the normal human experience, or we can experience them as hard and then get into a mental game on whose fault it was. And who is the ultimate causer of pain? And often what happens in for us psychologically is when we have a hard time, and if we don't have a good and thorough understanding of that, you know, in human life we suffer, what we often do is we'll often hate other people, but more regularly learn to blame and hate ourselves. It's a process that we all do in some way, in some fashion, but it's very common, I've found, for people with an anxiety disorder, because it doesn't make sense to blame anybody else, and it's sometimes we don't know what to blame because we didn't know we had OCD the whole time. We have no one but to blame, but ourselves. And that seems like the logical decision, and through that comes this absolutely traumatizing narrative in our mind and in our body of, you know, berating ourselves and being so, so hard on ourselves. So I think it's important first for us to understand that it's not a genetic thing. We don't genetically we're not genetically hard on ourselves. It's a learned behavior. And it's often through the misunderstanding that life is really hard and it's often nobody's fault. For me as a therapist, it's crucial to talk about self-love, self-compassion, common humanity, because very rarely in my experience is there true healing without those components. The true healing, you know, if I sit across the room from somebody who is doing exposure therapy, but you can see them gripping on themselves, you can see them grating on themselves, it doesn't seem to have a great outcome. But those who can soften and just open up the door just a little bit to a little bit of compassion and love, they seem to be the ones who really heal and really flourish in the treatment, in my experience. Not always, but in most of my experience. And for me personally, I am still on an evolution of learning self-love. What I thought was self-love a year ago is actually much different to this exact month. It's deeper. And every time, I think that for every time you open the door to love and compassion, you will learn more and more about the areas in your life that you didn't. Because, you know, I have recently did a podcast similar on this similar topic, and I said, if you asked me 6 months ago if I was kind to myself, I would have said absolutely, but only through deep work have I realized there's these little intricate ways that I still have work to do.
Yeah, really, really good point, and I completely agree on the Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I didn't like have, I didn't love myself, if I'm honest. I think I liked myself, but I wouldn't say I loved myself. There's kind of stages, as you said, and like in a year's time, I'd be like, wow, you know, I'm still really hard on myself. And there's also areas I notice it's easier for me to apply that. No, thank you. That was really useful. Okay, so how often does this kind of lack of, I'm going to keep using the term self-love. How often does this lack of self-love or even an ability to accept the self appear in your sessions with your clients?
In nearly everyone.
Yeah.
Whether I bring it up is a different thing.
Okay.
But I see it, you know, and you'll see it not just, I think people think that self-love is just by saying kind things.
Mm.
But it's not just that. It's holding, self-love is more than just saying kind things and respectful things. It's holding only realistic expectations instead of really high unrealistic expectations. It's softening your body instead of, you know, gripping always. Not that that's sort of some kind of analytical thing that you're trying to hurt yourself. That's not what I'm saying. But self-love is and sort of a global experience that, you know, there's no perfect way to do it.
Hmm.
But, you know, it's more than just saying kind things. It's treating yourself well and giving yourself time to heal and being realistic with expectations, as I said, and holding space for your emotions without judgment, ultimately, and letting them do their own thing, I think it's a huge piece of the work. Again, I don't bring it up to every client because sometimes that would be way too overwhelming for them, for me to put that on them. Yeah. In whatever state they're in.
Yeah, I agree. And like with trauma and stuff, if that's present, then trying to force someone to love themselves and that the trauma's not been dealt with can be quite traumatic in and of itself, I'm guessing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
We can always start with self-respect.
Okay, yeah. Good place, yeah. Yeah, I like that. Okay, so let's get on to the listener questions because I thought they were brilliant. So the first one is self-love carried out through actions or is it something you need to practice in your mind? That's the part I find hard and have no idea where to start.
It's a great question. I think, again, to sort of piggyback off my statement about my own personal experience is I think it's actually different for every person. I think it's more asking yourself in what area have you lacked? And to if this person asking the question is saying, I'm good at it by taking care of my body and giving it self-care, but not in the words, it sounds like they know the area that they've lacked in it. And how would you start? I've learned through my practice and through the podcast that asking people to step into self-love is too much. Let me tell you a story. I may have told you this story before, but I was at a conference and I did a whole presentation on self-love. And at the very end, and it was very well received and people loved it and they had great questions and I was just on fire having the best time. And one girl at the very end, it was the very last question, put her hand up and she said, I'm so angry at you because you've done nothing but talk about self-love and this magical feeling and I don't feel any of that.
Hmm.
Right? I don't feel any of that. And then time was up and I just wanted to cry because it was like I just hated that was how it ended for this one participant. But what I learned from that was we have to first look at how judgmental we are on ourselves because we're not so loving, right? What she was struggling with was 100% valid, which is when you meet yourself and you recognize that you don't have self-love, the first step is to not judge that. That's the first step, because if you judge that, you won't get past that step. So it's totally okay if you are hard on yourself. We don't want that. It's not ideal, but please don't beat yourself up for beating yourself up. The second step is self-respect, right? There are steps towards self-love, which is if you can't stop saying, if you can't get to self-love right away, first start at not saying anything disrespectful. And maybe do an inventory on some of the things that, and do a little awareness check on what you say during the day that you would consider disrespectful. And some examples of that might be, you're dumb, you're not fast enough, you're not pretty enough, you shouldn't be doing compulsions, you're a loser, you're never going to get better, those kinds of things. So it's catching the negative talk first. And then once you've got that and you can take the judgment out, then you add what I call the yellow fluffy chicken, which is treat yourself like you would a yellow fluffy chicken, like a little baby. I've said this before, like treat yourself, talk to yourself like you would talk to yourself if you were a 4-year-old or a 6-year-old or a 13-year-old, how you would talk to your own child. Fill it, and if that feels hard and vulnerable, just first start with adding words that are less vulnerable, like buddy, like good job, buddy, or, you know, you tried, pal, like adding little bit. This is a very much more of a neurolinguistic thing of just, it's like exposure therapy, but in a hierarchical way of move up the love ladder. Start easy and go up from there, and give yourself tons of time for this. You'll have revelations on the way, yeah. Like the most beautiful revelations. It doesn't have to, don't put pressure on yourself to go from self-hatred to self-love in less than a week. It's too much.
Yeah. Really good point. And I love those steps that you broke down. Something that I actually planned to say at the start, which I forgot, so I'll do it now, which is, yeah, in no way do I assume people listen to this podcast and be like, I love myself. That would be awesome if anyone listens and they feel that way. Means we've done a good job. But, for me to get to a point, and I'm still not where I want to be with it, and that's okay. But it took me years of therapy to be able to sit in that chair and be like, I'm proud of myself. So for years, I wasn't proud of myself. No matter what people were saying to me, it couldn't sink in. And then it just clicked for me. But it took years of deep work, as you say, to get there. So a reason why I wanted this dialogue is, A, to give people some ideas. B, is just to get that ball rolling for them. And maybe it takes years to go from self-hatred to self-love. But I want them to take that first step, as the proverb goes.
Right. I think the thing is, often I'll hear clients say, there's no way, there's no hope for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm too far gone, ultimately. That mountain looks too big to climb. But that's, I think you've just made a great point, which is you'll have a revelation in just a few steps if you try. It doesn't have to be, it's the same with exposures and any kind of thing in our life, is if you don't just get the great ending at the end. There's all these great little messages along the way of this sort of healing journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And each kind of step on the path has its own reward and meaning and learning and whatever. Right. And that's what life is. It's a journey, right? It's not about getting to the end. The gift is in the journey towards, I guess, love.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop on that point. Okay, so the next listener question is, for me, when I feel like I've done something bad, and bad is in speech marks, and I start to hate myself over it, I can't seem to be motivated to give myself self-love, as I feel I don't deserve it. Even taking love from others is very hard. Any tips on how to kickstart it in those moments?
Right. Well, this is why mindfulness marries so well with self-love. In fact, they go together. The first step with this question that I would immediately address, which is, we are not our thoughts. we are going to have all kinds of crazy stuff go through our head. Some good stuff, some not so good stuff. I was listening to this amazing audiobook yesterday and she was talking about the word mostly. Like, we're mostly good and we're mostly kind. And I love that because I think in the world of anxiety, we think black and white and we think we have to always be good and we have to always be kind. But the truth is we're mostly good and we're mostly kind. And so I think the first step is to recognize, number one, we aren't our thoughts. And from that perspective, the work here is to be able to diffuse from those thoughts. So what that means is it's more of an acceptance and commitment therapy tool, which is where we observe thoughts as if they're kind of floating across, instead of thinking that every thought that we have is an imprint of our DNA and the quality of ultimately our morals. So number one, that's the first step. The second step here, when it comes to us having those thoughts, is there isn't any moral police here. There's no self-love police. Self-love is not conditional. And that's another big piece of the work here, is we have fallen into a trap of being very conditional with ourselves. I will be okay with myself if I am this size of a body. I'm a good person if I don't have any bad thoughts. And it becomes very, we have this relationship where we're like, you know, I'm only allowed to have good things if I'm only good. And that can, so it's really important to catch that conditional narrative. And if you can, the work, she was saying she feels guilty for it or she can't receive it.
Can't receive it.
Yeah. So this is, I've probably talked about this before, I can't remember, but I actually love the word receive. Receive is one of the most powerful actions or behaviors we do as humans. It's receiving, particularly in the therapy field, right? So the receiving of love is painful. It is. It makes no sense. And that's probably why we struggle with it. Receiving love is painful, right? In many ways, because of this long-term, lifelong, conditional relationship we've had with it. So what I often do with my clients is I have a little, this is just an example, is in my office, as I have next to the chair, is a cup of candy, little chocolates, delicious things. And on the other side of the couch is these fiddles, things that are fun and tactile to play with. And then outside of my office is a tea station, which we created with all these different flavored teas. And once we talk about receiving, we talk about what would you allow me to give you, and you could practice receiving in my office. Could you start this journey of receiving? And often clients are like, no, I feel guilty for that. I feel like it's taking up your time and I don't want you to wait on me or whatever. And I'd like, no, please let me receive, you know, receive from me, right? Or if that's too hard, when you're leaving the supermarket, have the grocery man who's often asked, do you want help to your car? You practice receiving from them. It doesn't have to be in all the lovey-dovey ways with chocolates and hearts and unicorns. It's just the action of receiving pleasure or care or calm or love in any form. So I think here is it's a practice. Self-love is a practice of receiving. It's an action. Right? So start there and start small, real small. Right. And it's really, this is where I talked at the beginning about how I love to improve people's relationship with all of the emotions. It used to be more just fear. But now what I'm learning is you receiving love is probably a form of exposure and response prevention to a different emotion, maybe guilt, shame, you know, embarrassment. Some people are really embarrassed by love. It makes them feel quite, you know, red and hot flushed. It's a practice of receiving and it's an exposure. But we do desensitize from that. We do habituate to that and we can learn to tolerate it.
Yeah, it's a really good way of looking at it, and I love the idea of starting small. Like you said, it's an action. Same with like compassion or gratitude. You don't have to feel grateful. You can just start small and find a tiny thing, and then do that every day for a year. You're probably going to be the most grateful person you know. It's almost inevitable if you put in those. Well, I don't want to say that, but you know what I mean. It's why it's happened. If you put in the action, right? If you lift weights every day, you're bound to get strong. Unless you tear a muscle or something, but
You will not tear a muscle in this evening
no,
last.
that's true.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, this isn't a fitness podcast, so don't take any advice I say seriously. Actually, advice on anything, to be honest. Yeah, no, that's interesting. I remember hearing this story once where these, and I mean, I'm sure many people can relate to this, where you go to, for example, it could be like a meal or a coffee, you're with someone, you go to pay for it, and they're like, no, I'll pay for it. And then you're like, no, I'll pay for it. And then there's this awkward back and forth until someone finally is more convincing. And I remember in the story, this person kind of snapped at the other person and said, you really going to rob me of the opportunity to do something nice for you? And I always remember that now. Whenever I'm back and forth with someone, I go, actually, thank you. I receive this. I don't say I receive this, but I'm like, I'm grateful for it because I know that that's a really nice thing for them. And I don't know if that kind of relates, but it's like,
It totally does.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a part of the bigger service here is and this is another way you could potentially stepping stone it is if receiving love or joy from somebody is too painful, it might be that you do an act of service for somebody else, but then you slow down enough to really receive the joy and the love that you feel by helping. A lot of people heal from dark, dark things through acts of service. And through the act of service, they learn to love themselves, right? By doing things like paying for people's dinner or helping someone on the street. So again, we can be really creative here around this definition of love, self-love, because it's not just saying, I love you, you're the best person. It's so minuscule in our life. It shows up in the smallest areas, right? For me, often it's like I'm between clients, and for me, it might be stopping and just taking a breath. Like of all the things I could do, that is the most loving thing I could do before going to see the next client. Or if I'm with my kids, the most loving thing I can do is look them in the eye. It's not telling them they're the best. There's no right way here.
Yeah, no, I really like that. And I'm sure some of those actions become like automatic or unconscious. And I think that's the beautiful thing. Those actions build up and they become habit. And then you're kind of practicing self-love without even realizing you're doing it. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so the next question, you kind of answered it, but our wheel can't speak. I will ask it. If you are, so this is a question, if you are lost in the feeling of having done something awful, how can you possibly also have self-love when the feelings do not go together?
This is a good question. Okay. So I'm assuming this has got something to do with OCD
Oh yeah, it was,
because.
sorry, I took the theme out, but it was around sort of paedophile based obsessions.
Okay. So let's bring it. I'm always going to bring it back to ERP here, right? Which is if you really want to learn how to mess with OCD, it's to have a really bad thought or a really quote unquote bad feeling or feel like, a false memory, let's say, and then go and practice through the mechanism of exposure therapy, being kind to yourself. That will make OCD crazy in a sense, because all you're in your brain is saying is you're a bad person because of this and you don't deserve any joy, as we talked about at the very beginning of this session. And so you should be really, really unkind to yourself and beat yourself up for this. Hmm. That is your punishment for this bad feeling. Well, let's come back again. You're not your thoughts. And even if you aren't, even for those of people who have, made a mistake, not that I'm saying this is the case for this person, but that no one, our healing as a human race is through love, right? It's not through fear. Hmm. Fear doesn't keep us happy and healthy. It's through love. So I think it's actually here what I would encourage the person who asked this question, is we can learn to hold two things at once. I think what is often happening is we think that because I have this bad feeling, there's no room for there to be an alternate feeling in the same moment. We can hold two at once. I can feel guilty about something and also love myself at the same time. Hmm. I can feel horrified by a thought that I've had, but also treat myself tenderly in whatever way that forms out for me. Both of those two things can exist at the same time. I think we misunderstand that. We don't see things dialectically. We only see them through the picture of if there's one right and that's the only thing that's allowed in here. So ultimately, it's make space for more than one feeling. Purposely look into inducing two feelings at once, which would be, I'm going to let guilt be here or shame be here, and then I'm also going to receive in the same moment, and I'm going to practice this juggling act, which will be your lifelong recovery with OCD, is the juggling, multiple balls at once, with having one thought that scares you and one thought that you're kind of comfortable with, and then some feelings and some actions that you actually value, such as self-love or self-respect. That's where you're starting from.
Yeah, I love that. You can have multiple emotions at one time and hold them all. And I love that. About making space as well. Like if you're anxious, I'm anxious, I'm going to make space for that, I'm going to allow it, and now I'm going to focus back on doing that thing I was enjoying, or cool. All right.
I was going to say, the last thing I would say is sometimes the most loving thing you can say is, I'm so sorry you're going through this. Mm. Right? So it might even be that you don't do any grand act of love in terms of like have a spa bath or, get a foot rub or anything like that, or say anything grand in the form of like love and romance. It might be just saying, I'm so sorry that you're feeling this way. That might be the first step, or it might always be the step, and that's a great step if that's what you can get to.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's starting to speak to yourself, you would someone you deeply care about. Next question, listener question, is how can I put self-love into my daily routine so that it becomes a habit?
Okay, this is great. You can be as routine or as flexible as you like. There is really great apps where I actually have had them in the past, where they pop up, you schedule them to have a little saying that you resonate with, and that it pops up 10 times a day or 100 times a day, whatever you need. I actually put aside the app for sticky notes. So I actually found that the apps were distracting me and making my life a little more anxiety provoking, because then I would see an email or whatever. So I actually moved on over to sticky notes, right? Okay. So, a sticky note with, you are worthy of love, or, you are loved by many, or, it can be whatever feels. It might be just the word love or a heart. If you're not wanting sticky notes around, it could be a sticker or something that just reminds you of it. So you could have like daily reminders like that. Other things to remember here is, again, I want to keep emphasizing that self-love isn't just words. It's multiple things in multiple places. For me, and I shared a little bit about this with you before, is as I've actually been going through a medical issue in the last couple of months, and I actually thought I was super loving towards myself, and I am. And I have been for quite a while in my recovery. But what I realized through this was fascinating, which was the most loving thing I could do is to actually rest. And when I mean rest, I mean kind of do nothing. And I used to think I did nothing, but I actually didn't. I was thinking about this and I was thinking about that and kind of planning. And it was this actual stopping and being still. And of all the loving things I've ever done, that's probably the most nourishing and replenishing thing of love I could do. So it doesn't have to be just words. It might be, again, going back to self-care, bubble bath, taking time to read a book. You can, like I said, you can have it be flexible and just be intuitive and ask yourself what you need, which is a really big like self-compassion tool, which is this really important question, what do I need? Or it could be setting it up. If you really love the idea of getting through a hard day, knowing that this afternoon you have this self-care, self-love routine ready to go, that will work too. I think it's very different for every person. You've got to look at yourself and see where you need to implant things in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice. So next listener question is, I'm pretty sure we've answered it, or you have, so I'll ask it and tell me if we have, which is, how can I practice self-love when I often feel like a bad person?
How?
Yeah.
You just do. Huh. That's a really annoying question, but it's, this question, what they're really saying is, I'm still on the hook. I'm still conditional. I still am. Self-love is only warranted if I feel like a good person. And that conversation gets us stuck. And so this is where we have to step back and say, self-love and self-compassion and common humanity is not conditional. We all are worthy of the same peace and joy, right? We all deserve, whether we've had good thoughts today, bad thoughts today, whether we're recovered or not, whether we have money or not, all the things, right? So you just do. You do it because it's a crucial part of being a human, not because you've checked off all of the things on the list and that you're a good boy or a good girl today, right? So again, you're not your thoughts, you're not your feelings, you know, you're not your urges, you're not your sensations. Allow them to come and go as they please, and don't get into a checkbox match on a tally match on whether you deserve it today, because you do. There's no day you don't. I would even go, for me, this was a lesson for me as well, is the harder the day is, the more I need to make time for self-love, right? The more anxiety I have, the more I need to get a babysitter and go and face plant on my bed and sleep it off. You know, the more panic attacks you have, the more, you know, you need to nourish yourself and your body. It's not, this is not a tally thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point about unconditional. Obviously, Carl Rogers, psychologist, talks about unconditional positive regard, which most therapists should be bringing into the room with their clients. And that's how I view myself and my clients and everyone else in the world, is we are, and I am, inherently good at my core. And I may say stupid stuff at times. I may do stupid stuff at times, or bad, or whatever word you want to use. And I could beat myself up about that. And sometimes I do. But I try and remember that kind of below all of that, there's this core that is unconditionally deserving of love and acceptance. And kind of having that rock almost helps me let that other stuff go and have forgiveness. Right. So I try and push, I'm unashamed of saying that, push this on other people. because wherever they think this of themselves or not, I hold them in that kind of place, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a tough one. How do you know when you are actually there, meaning, I guess, loving the self? And how do we stop convincing ourselves that we'll never get there?
Oh, that's a hard one, because like I said to you, if you had have asked me, I would have said I'm fully there.
Yeah.
But then, like I said, you reveal, I think we're just always going to grow. So how do we know when we get there? I don't know the exact answer to that, to be honest. I think it's individual for everyone, and it's a deeper and deeper practice. It's kind of like saying, how do you know if you love somebody? Like how do you know when you're in love? Well, I don't really know. It's just this constellation of emotions that I feel. But what in general, what I would say to that is, if you can receive it, again, I don't want people to listen today and then be like, all right, goal, 100% self-love. That's the goal. You won't win that one. I think you're having a relationship with self-love if you have a relationship with receiving. And that's how I would quantify it, is like, did I receive today? Did I slow down enough to actually take in that? I have had clients who have compulsively used quotes like, I am good, I am good, I am good. That's compulsive. It's compulsive in nature. Because it's just words they're saying. I actually would ask them, did you actually receive that message? Did you experience it? So I think that's how you know you're doing it. And what was the last question?
The last part was, and how do we know, and how do we stop convincing ourselves that we'll never get there?
Right. Well, I think this is no different to any other intrusive thought.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you think it doesn't make it true. And there is no such thing as never, right? Again, I think this is just so true of any experience we have that's difficult. In the moment, our brain, when it is talking through the lens of fear, will talk in black and white. You'll either get it or you won't ever. You'll either be a good person or you're the worst person, right? And to really catch any kind of black and white thinking, I don't know how to convince you. I'm not going to actually get into the ability to convince, because I actually haven't got that skill. But what I can do is I encourage this person who asked this question is just to step back and be first just an observer to the question in and of itself, which is, it's a black and white question. And here it is where, again, I will come back to, we can hold space for two things at once. I've had clients who have accepted doing exposure therapy on one side and also made space for the fact that they had thoughts that they weren't going to get better. And they made space for both, and they move forward anyway. So I think this might be, don't get into a wrestle with yourself and try and convince ourselves that we will get there. I think it's just holding space for those thoughts and holding space for two different emotions or three different emotions at one time. We don't want to get into a wrestle with thoughts here. Because, the practice of self-love is not through convincing or wrestling with it. It's through the receiving of just small moments, small milliseconds.
I like that. Okay, and then the next question is, how do you maintain it, that being self-love, especially when external sources not so and not just nasty thoughts aren't playing ball? So how do you kind of stop it from, I guess, backsliding?
Right.
Would it ever backslide? That's another question.
Can.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where I come back to how we started this, which is life happens.
Mm.
We get hit with the hardest things. And our first step is to be really awake to the truth of that, which is hard things happen to humans. Hard things don't just happen to bad people. And if you're going through something hard or you're having thoughts that are scary, it's not a reflection of who you are. right? It's a reflection that you're alive, your brain's moving around, doing its thing, right? And so, you know, I think the main point here is our work is, you know, allow it. Allow whatever's going on in that sort of way, right? And then if you can, this is again where we go back and we receive, 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 right?
Yeah, I love that. Okay, next listener question is, how do we, I love this one. So this kind of ties in what I was starting to waffle on at the start about, which is, how do we reduce the stigma that loving yourself is all about having a giant ego and arrogance?
This one is sort of more related to the last question than anything, I think, which is, this is a hard one, and this is a cultural issue. We have been raised in a society that constantly tells us we have to be better, that we need to keep up, right? That we need to, always be better, always be fixing. There's a quick fix for everything, right? And what goes along with that is a really great economy. And, you know, politically things happen in that case, but the psyches of our human race gets damaged, right? So I think what happens is, if you are, I sort of look at sort of a bit of the Australian culture here, and I'm sure you probably resonate with this as well, is if we pride ourselves on being thick-skinned, that's a quality. That's a quality. But it's hard to be thick-skinned and vulnerable at the same time. And if it's, you know, that's a tough one. You could do it, but it's pretty tough, right? And because of the amount of emphasis our society has put on thick-skinned, pull up your bootstraps, you know, don't be a show-off. In Australia, they say tickets, like don't sell your own tickets kind of thing. Like if you said anything, you know, positive about yourself, that someone would yell out tickets, because that means you're selling your own tickets.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's shamed. You're shamed for saying positive things about yourself. Our work here is modeling two things can exist at the same time. We can say kind things without it turning into an egotistical thing. Yeah. But that's just a story. It's a story we use to keep a thick skin. It doesn't service all of the research. Brené Brown's research, if you're familiar with that, has completely debunked this idea that toughening up and productivity up isn't effective. It's damaging. And this is where we can just turn into educators, right? We can educate. And so if someone says, oh, I can't do that, I do this probably every day in my office, because someone will say, I can't do that, because someone will think that I love myself too much or I'm into myself. And I'll say, no, model to them what true, authentic behavior looks like. Help teach my children's generation that that's not actually how it is. Help us change this narrative. I think it's all an attempt to protect ourselves from vulnerability, and we know now scientifically that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I can relate to all of that in British culture. Stiff upper lip, don't cry. I could go on. Right. Don't have a big head, or if your head gets any bigger, you won't fit through that door. Is one I've heard many times. cool. All right, thank you for that. So a couple questions towards the end now, not necessarily self-love related. So first time I've asked this on the podcast, and you can answer it in any way you want, which is, what are you curious about right now?
Curious.
Yeah. And not necessarily right now being this moment. It could be this week, this month.
That is a deep question still. I don't know if you have enough time. Oh, okay. What am I curious about? I am most curious this is like a personal question. I'm most curious around the question of what would it be like for me personally, where I am in my life and my growth and my own recovery, to turn outward instead of inward. So what I mean by that is, and this is a question I've actually been looking at for the last couple of weeks, is what would happen if I stopped trying to solve me and I just became awake to what's happening outside of me? Now, I've been talking about mindfulness for years. I've been practicing mindfulness for years, and probably some people are thinking, well, that's just mindfulness. But for me, it's, I think I was practicing mindfulness to try and solve me. Yeah. I was practicing mindfulness to fix me, and I'm learning it was never about me, and the healing doesn't come from trying to fix me in this grander way. I know that's really deep.
No.
Or maybe it's just really confusing, but I'm actually trying to stop fixing me.
Yeah.
Trying to just be. And I'm trying to just love in every way I can, and to receive all the emotions in every way I can. So instead of just having it be this fixed thing so that it ends well.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
What you were expecting?
No, it was better. I thought you were going to say something like, I go through stages where, like, last year I got fascinated by orcas for about a month, and I spent about 4 hours each night just watching videos and reading about them. But no, I love that. That's great.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I went way too deep.
No, I love it. I love it.
I'm curious about, you know, different flavors of soy milk ice cream.
Okay, so no, that was wonderful though, thank you. And you've answered this a million times, but I'll ask it again, which is, you've got a billboard, what do you want written on that billboard?
Okay, today what do I want written on the billboard?
Yeah.
Can I have 1 second? Let me think it through. Or I could just say that the first thing that came to mind was, I love you.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean that for you, and just that's what I would put on the board.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we hear that enough.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have.
Yeah. No, I love it.
Sending love out to, and I mean it in, like, actually I do this a lot on Instagram, is I'm just like, I love you guys. Mm-hmm. And it feels weird because I'm saying it into like an abyss of people I don't know, but it's kind of true. And I think we all need to hear it a little more.
Yeah. And receive it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
that. So maybe the exposure of this, it will be for the listeners to receive me saying, I love you.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Receiving love being sent from somebody else.
Absolutely, I love it. And unconditional love as well. Cool. I mean, is there anything else that I haven't asked you on this topic that you wish you could have shared?
No. I mean, again, this is it's a process for me. I think I'd just say it's a process for me too.
Yeah.
I'm not great at this. I love it. I'm really interested by it, but we all catch ourselves. And like I said, just the main point here is, if you are judging yourself and you're hard on yourself, the first step is that non-judgmental piece. You can't beat yourself up for beating yourself up. That's not where we start. We just start by taking notice. So yeah, if you're stuck with this, you're not alone, and it's not your fault either. Yeah. I think people really blame themselves because they suck at it, and it's not, you know, it's a very much a psychological maneuver that happens in our brain where we have to reflect anger in some place, and often we do it towards ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. It's reprogramming conditioning. That's it. Right. Yeah. Right. You kind of been conditioned unconsciously or against your will. Not saying it was manipulative by anyone, but like society, whatever, family, it all kind of drums in, or OCD, it kind of, and it's on us to start to work through some of that.
Right.
With love. Cool. Well, thank you as always for coming on. I deeply appreciate it.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
So there you have it. Really hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kimberly Quinlan. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show. I deeply appreciate it, and you. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.